Good evening. I'd like to call the January 5th, 2021 organizational meeting to order. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag?
Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Take roll call. Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Here.
Rich John.
Here.
Ian Klein.
Here.
Ian Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Dave McKenna. Glenn Morey.
Here.
Martha Robertson?
Here.
Mike Sigler?
Here.
Sorry. Shauna Black?
Here.
Amanda Champion?
Here.
Dave McKenna?
Here.
We have 13 members present. The first order of business this evening is the election of a temporary chair. Now we will open the floor for nominations. Deborah Dawson?
Yes, thank you. Kathy, I'd like to nominate Dan Klein.
Is there a second?
I will second that.
Amanda Champion, thank you. Are there any other nominations? Hearing none, may I have a motion to close nominations?
So move.
Leslie McBean Claiborne moved. Seconded by?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Deborah Dawson. Okay, I will take a roll call on closing nominations. Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Okay. 13 ayes, 0 noes for closing nomination. I will take roll call now for electing Dan Klein as temporary chair. Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes. Thank you, Dan. All yours.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks for doing double duty there.
Bless your heart.
Okay, the next order of business is the election of a chair for 2020 to the Tompkins County Legislature. Do we have any nominations? Shauna Black.
Thank you, Dan. Or shall I say Chair Klein?
don't say that.
it is my distinct pleasure to nominate Ms. Leslie Claiborne, McBean Claiborne, for Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature this evening. This time last year, we had absolutely no idea what 2020 had in store for us. There was a lengthy battle for Chair amongst the legislature and definitely a sense of unease. After many, and I repeat, many votes, it was decided that Leslie would become our chair. No sooner than she became our chair, we embarked upon a world that would be forever changed. COVID-19 was in our community. I'm not saying it's because of you, Leslie. Leslie assumed the chair's role with confidence, great leadership, and despite the chaos around, a sense of calm that we all needed. Leslin was the absolute perfect person for the job. Her charisma, intelligence, and connection to our community make her an amazing representative. Over the past 3 years, I've been fortunate enough to call Leslin a colleague, but over the past year, I have been her wingwoman and someone I would definitely consider one of my dearest friends. She's mentored me and others, and I'm sure will continue to do this in the upcoming year. I look forward to the many great things that 2021 has in store for us and this legislature, and I know that we can accomplish that with Leslin's leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Shauna. Is there a second?
I'll second it, Dan.
And Lori, thank you. Do you want to make any comments?
Yes, and first let me say thank you to Leslin for doing a magnificent job over one of the toughest years that we've ever had in the legislature. You did not panic. You kept us up to date and well-informed, which meant to me that my constituents were well-informed and up to date, too. Again, thank you for a great job you've done, and I am happy to second this nomination for chair of 2021.
Thank you, Glenn. Are there any other nominations? Seeing none, I'll ask for a motion to close nominations. Deborah moves it. Martha seconds it. Can we do a roll call on closing nominations, please?
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grayneson?
Yes.
Rich Jen?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslin McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Very good. So it's time to vote on chair for 2021. We have one nominee, Leslin McBean Claiborne. Can we get, does anybody want to make any other comments before we vote? Okay. Roll call, please.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grayneson?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslin McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Congratulations, Leslin.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think this is where I take over. Is that right? Okay.
The rest of the year.
Oh, thank you, Dan, for serving as our temporary chair. Thank you, Shauna, for your gracious nomination, and thank you, Glenn, for that beautiful second to the nomination of me for chair. You all know that despite this hardcore exterior, I'm a big sop. So I am... gotta choke it back, Shauna, and just say thank you. This year, as you all know, this past year has been quite a challenge. Tumultuous is not even enough to describe what we've all been going through. And I've just been thankful to have colleagues like all of you to help support my leadership. I'm without words. Thank you for your vote of confidence, and I can assure you that this year we are going to continue to just do the business of county government that the people have come accustomed to us doing, even though we're not out of the woods with a pandemic, even though we know that things are probably going to be topsy-turvy for a lot longer. We work well. We may not always agree with each other, but we don't have to be disagreeable. So we'll continue to build our relationships and think about ways that we can be that, not only the beacon of hope, but be that example to other elected bodies of how people with different opinions, differing minds, different approaches can work together and accomplish what we need to accomplish. I'm not going to make any big, long speeches tonight. I will save a lot to say at our next meeting when we talk about the state of the county. But again, thank you all for your vote of confidence. Thank you for your support of my leadership. And now I will call for the nomination of vice chair of the legislature. Are there any nominations? Deborah Dawson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for agreeing to do this again. Sometimes a thankless job. It's my privilege and pleasure to nominate Shauna Black for a third term as vice chair of our legislature. Shauna keeps us well-informed, individually and as a group, is always available to listen to everyone's concerns and answer our questions. She's definitely a high-energy people person, and her skill set has served us well as we've moved through this unprecedentedly tumultuous year. Shauna and Lesbian function harmoniously, effectively, and efficiently as a team, and I'm very much looking forward to serving another year under their leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Is there a second? Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for agreeing to serve again. I want to second Shauna's nomination for vice chair. This past year, I was actually looking up synonyms for tumultuous, because tumultuous, just as you said, Madam Chair, doesn't quite do it. And the other words that I came up with were hectic, irregular, wild, disturbed, disorderly, clamorous, raucous, riotous, stormy, and violent. All of those would describe, you know, there is no one word to describe this year that we've been through. And I am so grateful that Shauna was helping you navigate us through this stormy year. She also had to deal with homeschooling and some other personal challenges, and she was always there for us, always there for us, always there for the community. So I just wanted to let the community know that she is just always there. And it one term that kind of sticks out to me that kept coming to me today was she's steady at the helm, even though she might get pushed, or as a county we're getting pushed this way and that way, and news is happening, you know, by the minute. She's always there and make sure she's helping to navigate us through this. So I thank you for your steadfastness and your calmness to help us through this, and with especially a keen eye on working families, people that are homeschooling, and the working class who have been so affected by this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Are there any other nominations for vice chair? Seeing none, I have a motion to close nominations for vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. Moved by Amanda Champion. May I have a second, please? Seconded by Ann Corman. Vote in closing nominations.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Nominations are closed. We are going to move to a vote for the vice chair position. Are there any other comments from anyone? We have one candidate, Shauna Black. Okay. Roll call vote.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Stjahan?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Korman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Len Maury?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously. Congratulations, Shauna, on being reelected vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. Yay! All righty. That almost seems uneventful. I feel like I should stir up something.
Does Shauna have any comments?
Shauna, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
I will continue to thank my colleagues. This has been a heck of a year. And the 13 people that I serve with are absolutely incredible. And Leslie's right. There are times where we do not agree. But the beautiful thing is that we could shake hands at the end of the night, go back to our families, and then come back at it 2 weeks later. So I've always really appreciated that fact. I'd also like to thank my family, of course. It's been a very, very difficult year for many families in Tompkins County, and mine is no different. I look forward to a really uneventful 2021, and I thank you all for your support.
Thank you, Shauna. Thank you, Mike. That was beautiful. All right, and then we just go on with the business of our agenda. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. You all would have received many communications. We have no proclamations tonight. As far as I know, there are no executive sessions. I don't see the county administrator. At least when we spoke, there was none. And I'm assuming that there isn't. Thank you very much, Jason. Privilege of the floor for the public.
We have one member. Like to speak, Leslie.
Where?
Jill, right down here.
Oh, thank you. So we have one individual, Leslie Schill, who is here to speak to us on the privilege of the floor for the public. Just as a reminder, Leslie, if you're there and can hear us, we have a 3-minute limit for our public. We've been a little loose with it, you know, due to COVID. And we do encourage all of our public speaking to us, anyone addressing us, to be polite, avoid using profanity and or speaking disparagingly about any person other than our elected officials. So we thank you for taking time to come talk to us. Leslie.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for having me this evening. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
My name is Leslie Schill, and I am pleased to join you all this evening to announce my candidacy for District 2 for County Legislature. I just wanted to come and introduce myself to those that I don't know, although I do know some of you. I am a longtime resident of District 2, 13 years now in Fall Creek community. And I'm pretty excited about this opportunity, actually. I have served on multiple committees for the county. I have a history working for the county. For 5 years, I was in the Tompkins County Planning Department, working on issues from energy and greenhouse gas emissions to the Emerald Necklace in partnership with the Finger Lakes Land Trust, so working on trail projects, to the Route 96 corridor management study, so transportation analysis. I also led up the Cleaner Greener Regional when we first started the regions. Coordinating with, you know, 7 counties and leading an effort for regional economic development that was focused on a green future. So that was something I did between 2007 and 2012 when I worked for the County Planning Department. And more recently, I now head up, I am the director of Cornell's Campus Planning Office. And so I've had a lot of opportunity actually to work intermunicipally and to partner with many people in the county, both staff and elected officials, and to build relationships and rapport. I have long really appreciated the high-level view that the county takes, and the level that the county has, where you can partner with all of your municipal partners, be a leader on policy, and also kind of push up to the state level and think about how we want to lead from our place in Tompkins County for the rest of the state, is really an admirable, I think, goal and role. And I currently am the vice chair of the Planning Advisory Board for the county. I'm also a member, longtime member now, of the Affordable Housing Committee, the Program Oversight Committee. And I've served on other boards and committees, for example, with the city. I was on most recently on the City of Ithaca's Waterfront Zoning Committee. I do spend my time thinking about this community and how to improve it. As many people have already said tonight, 2020 has been a real year for reflection. And it's thrown a lot of challenges our way. I really see that the state budget is going to be a big challenge coming down to the county. And I really think that I can play an important role as a voice for my community, as well as in partnership with folks that are really looking to create a better Tompkins County, but also to deal with what we have received on the receiving end of 2020. I will be focusing my campaign all around a message of community health. So the healthy community is really what I'm thinking about. And healthy communities from the physical and mental health aspects to environmental health in this community to thinking about, most importantly, front and center, public health at the moment and coronavirus and how we can make sure that we all come out of this pandemic better. I feel very motivated, and I do think that I bring a lot of background, information, research, knowledge that I can share and am often sharing with my community members, but now I can also serve as a voice for my community. So I am looking forward to a run for this seat, and I'll be probably poking in and coming to more of these meetings and listening to where you all are focusing your efforts as we move into a new year. I just wanted to say thank you, and I'll be out there probably getting petitions signed starting this week. I know that this is a resolution that's later on the agenda tonight. So thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Thanks for joining us and speaking on a privilege of the floor. Anyone else? Yeah. All right. Privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I do see our dearest colleague, George McGonigal. Happy New Year, George. Glad you can be here with us.
Happy New Year, everyone.
And you too, George.
And congratulations, Leslin, and congratulations.
You're gone.
I've got Alzheimer's. Did I tell you that? Congratulations, Shauna.
Thank you.
Sorry. Yeah, it's typical.
A moment.
Right. And I will say that I worked with Leslie on the waterfront committee with the city, and she was real good, and she's a good listener. So I was fortunate to work with her on the waterfront committee. I just have a few things. I'm just going to go over some of the things we're going to talk about tomorrow at the Common Council meeting. We'll be voting to whether or not to rescind the residency requirement for senior staff, for department heads and their deputies. Currently, they have to live in Tompkins County unless they're fire or police. And we're going to vote on whether or not to rescind that and have no residency requirement. We're going to rescind the preferred developer designation for Inlet Island. That preferred developer designation was made way back in the early 2000s, and it really no longer applies. It's not punishing anyone. It's just wiping the board clean and starting over. We are going to vote on whether or not to join with Cycle Central New York in an effort to build a mountain bike trail on Cass Park up against the western side, where it's scrubby and swampy right now, but kind of between the base, the softball fields, and Route 89. We will be voting on whether or not to have dogs on the commons. That vote was put off last month, so we are going to vote on that. We will be voting on a resolution in support of the Wasco Lake Watershed's efforts to develop WRRs, which are watershed rules and regulations. This is something they've been working on for at least 3 years. And the feeling is that having regulations for watersheds is much more effective than just going municipality by municipality. And there's actually some state interest in this, which has been lacking for many, many years. So the city is in support of this for the Wasco Lake Watershed in hopes that we can bring what they learn to the Cayuga Lake Watershed. This is a really important thing, I believe. Finally, probably the biggest money item we're going to deal with tomorrow is a vote on whether to approve an agreement with the Rimland Group, who want to build a very large apartment mixed-use project facing Green Street to the east of City Hall and just west of the hotel on the corner. And that's all I've got.
Thank you, George. Are there any questions or comments for George?
Oh, come
Martha?
On.
Oh, come on, right, George? Somebody's got a question. Happy New Year, George. Thanks for being here. Good report. I'm just curious about do you have a head count on the dogs on the commons and on the residency requirement? Do you know how those will go?
I think they will both, the residency requirement, I believe, will be rescinded. The feeling there is that we may be facing a number of retirements in the near future, and we don't want to limit, if it's internal promotions, we don't want to make them move necessarily from where they've been living for years. And we don't want to limit the pool of people we have access to. So I believe that, will be rescinded. And as far as dogs on the commons, I think that will pass. With some careful provisions that hopefully will limit the dangers and nuisances that could occur with dogs on the commons.
Thank you. The residency requirement is interesting because we've talked about that feels like just this past year, but maybe it was earlier. And it takes a lot of thought. So I'm interested to hear how that goes.
I agree. I gave it a lot of thought myself. I actually suggested maybe broadening it to adjacent counties and seeing how that went. But I think they're just going to eliminate it. and see what happens.
All right. Thanks a lot, George.
Yep.
All right. It's Martha Henry.
Yes, George. How are you doing?
Good, Henry.
I was wondering, I know the dogs in the Commons resolution went back to committee and now it's coming back. What's the result of that committee change? I mean, what's going to be the rule about dogs in the Commons?
Well, they wanted to clarify the language, and I can't tell you blow by blow how they changed it, but dogs will be allowed on the Commons. They'll have to be on a leash, and they can't be on one of those retractable leashes that goes way out and comes way back. It's going to have to be 6 feet or less. The owners of the dogs have to clean up after the dogs. Actually, it may be easier to enforce than simply having no dogs on the Commons because the bad behaviors are clearly defined.
And are the IPD are the only enforcers?
The only ones I know of, so
okay.
There you go. There's the Achilles heel.
Okay, that's all. Thanks.
Thank you, Henry. Anyone else? Thank you very much, George. Please do convey our Happy New Year greetings to all of your colleagues in Common Council.
Thank you, and it's good to see you all.
Good to see you, too. Presence of corporate legislators. Anything to be announced? Martha?
Thank you. Sure, I'll go. First, Leslin and Shauna, congratulations and thank you for carrying the ball another year. It's I don't know, it's hazard duty, right? So it's great that you're both prepared and willing to do that. Thank you very much. I wanted to announce two things from the town of Dryden. One is that without a ton of kerfuffle, the town has recently adopted a new law about short-term rentals, Airbnb and other rentals. And property owners involved in such businesses must comply with the law, and all the details are on the town's website. So I mentioned that because I know other municipalities have talked about this at length and had long committee involvement. I think they did that, but it seems like it went through relatively easily and quickly. I also want to invite the public, anybody who is listening in from the town of Dryden, the comprehensive plan is, they're in the process of updating the comprehensive plan this year, and there are public workshops January 20th, 26th, and 27th. I'll just say full information, if anybody's interested, go to the website dryden2045.org. That's the 35-year time frame. Is that right, 35, 15, whatever, 25-year time frame. Dryden2045.org for full information, or you can call 844-8888, extension 216, to get information, to get a paper copy of the information if you'd like that. So upcoming workshops at the end of this month, and the information is available to review on the website now. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Martha. Anyone else? All right, I'll take a quick turn. Before this legislature meets again, we will be celebrating the life legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The holiday is coming up, I believe, on the 18th, yes. And on the 16th is the annual GIAC Martin Luther King Jr. Community Breakfast. Of course, we're not gathering. It will be a virtual event. It's a BYOB, bring your own breakfast. But this year, we hope to
treat our community to everything that we've done, and also an even more special a guest this year we've invited, and she's accepted to join us, Dr. Leah Wright-Rigger. She is a professor of, I have to read it because I can't remember all that she does, but she is a professor of American history at Brandeis University, and a former, as of just last year, associate professor of public policy at Harvard Kennedy School. She'd been there for a while. She's a trained political historian, and her scholarship and research expertise is very lengthy. She is also an award-winning author, and a very interesting book called The Loneliness of the Black Republican, Pragmatic Politics and the Pursuit of Power. She is a current contributor to ABC News, and if you'd like to get a glimpse of who she is in person, she covers a lot of the elections, and I believe this evening actually, we'll be covering the Georgia elections on ABC News. She will be gracing us with her presence. We're excited by that, and we encourage you to please join us 9:30. We were trying to do something a little different this year and move it back a little bit, but people have gotten used to our breakfast on Saturday the 16th for our annual GX annual Martin Luther King Community Breakfast. Just a couple of performances and then our speaker, and an opportunity for our community to engage in Q&A with her as well. Very forward-moving young lady, and we're excited to have her join us. So please mark your calendars, and we'll see you there. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much, legislators. Moving on. Everything that I would say in my chair's report, you will hear from the county administrator and others as we continue to deal with COVID-19, with vaccine rollout, vaccinations, and everything else that goes along with that. But I do want to just take this opportunity in this new year, the beginning of this year, to say a great big thank you. I know you all say it individually, but I'm saying it on behalf of all of the citizens of Tompkins County, on behalf of this legislature, to all of your families of all of us legislators, and the families of all of the staff who have been working tirelessly to make sure that our community stays safe, and again, to make sure that the business of county government gets done. We often don't see what's happening behind the scenes that allow us to do the things that we do. And sometimes our families are our four-legged family members who miss us when we are not there, or we're not paying attention, and we see it in these Zoom calls when they, you know, try to get on the covers or crawl across your head because you're not paying attention. And I'm very serious about it. It may sound humorous, but I am, because it does have meaning. And we have spent an enormous amount of time in meetings and on calls, and none of us have really complained. We're all Zoom fatigued, but we still show up. And when we're showing up, it means that somebody else is getting other things done. And we are thankful to our families, and I just wanted to take an opportunity to highlight them and lift them up and let them know that we value everything that you have been doing behind the scenes, even though we don't see it, to allow us to do the work that we're doing. So thank you very much, families, for being there for all of us. There are some, I don't have any appointments, Kathy, do I? No.
No
appointments for me. No special presentations or discussions. And now we will move to reports by our county administrator, county attorney, and director of finance. I'm going to start with our county attorney.
That's me. Gets me out of order just to surprise me.
I know.
I want to say a few words because it's come up whether the roll call method of voting that you're using is the best method or whether there's something that would meet legal requirements. And I've thought about it, talked it over with Kathy Covert, and to be honest, I don't see any better method that would meet the legal requirements. Under law, the vote of each individual member is required to be recorded. That's both under FOIL and under the open meetings law. And there are various ways to do that, you know, in the Zoom age. But the plain truth is just doing the roll call is probably as simple a way as there is. The other methods, and I can go through them, but they really don't save any time or money. I'm not any time or effort by people. So I realize that it sometimes it seems lengthy and maybe unnecessary because obviously when you're in open session and people could see you, you know, people just raise their hands as opposed to going through a roll call takes more time than that. But in the Zoom age, this seems like the best way to comply with the law. And other methods of doing it, which are doing, just really aren't going to save any time or effort. You know, be happy to answer any questions about that. But otherwise, I don't really have a report.
Thank you, Jonathan, for that. You know, I really wanted to make sure that our colleagues hear that and that the public hears that. I think there's a level of accuracy with the roll call votes that I think is important for us to maintain. So thank you for thinking about it and for sharing your opinion. I can't put stuff in the chat. Anything else, Jonathan? Any questions to Jonathan?
The things in the chat and the participation, like even the hands and stuff, are not things that are seen by the general public. They create an issue in terms of the open meetings law. Not between, you know, obviously people could communicate amongst ourselves, but need to understand the public doesn't see those. So for things like voting, they're problematic.
Got it. It was a funny question that was in the chat. Mike Lane.
Jonathan, I just want to ask, why wouldn't the short form roll call work in your opinion?
I mean, I suppose it would. I mean, the thing with the short form roll call is that it essentially works only when there is unanimity, right? I mean, it's sort of similar to the show of hands on Zoom. Like, it works fine if there's unanimity. If there's not, if people are different, and a lot of things, you know, there's everybody isn't unanimous, then it ends up actually taking longer. So I don't have a problem with the short form. It's just that if there's not unanimity, which there isn't in many circumstances, it actually takes longer rather than shorter.
I guess I don't understand that because the way we do short forms is if the first or second person says no, then you just continue with a full roll call.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. I mean, sure, you can do that. But if there's anybody who says is going to vote no, then you end up doing the regular roll call anyway.
All right.
Thanks for your question, Mike. Anyone else? Right. Anything else, Jonathan?
No.
Thank you very much. This time around, I'm going to call in our county administrator, Jason Molina.
Happy New Year. It's good to see everybody.
Happy New Year.
So we have a presentation today. We're going to do our regular COVID update. I know we've had a lot of questions. So Frank's available, Amy's available, Dominic's available, and we'll kick right to it if you'd like. Actually, I would like to do one thing before I start. I just want to, I'll give you a shorter update before the longer one. Many of you may not realize it, but today is Lisa Holmes' last legislature meeting as the Interim Human Resource Commissioner. Lisa took on this position back in August of 19, what was anticipated to be a few months stay. Then COVID hit, and here we are in January of 21. She's done a wonderful job, has done, I think really has instilled a lot of confidence in the organization and our human resource department, has been able to really move the needle in a lot of areas, help and efficiencies in the department and the organization. And I just want to thank her publicly for a job well done. Definitely has been a longer stay than anticipated, but I think is put the department and put the organization in a great position for Ruby, who will be coming in on Monday to take the reins. So Lisa, thank you very much for your hard work, and thanks for doing a wonderful job over the past 14 months or 15 months or so.
So we echo those sentiments from all of us of the legislature, Lisa. Thank you so very kindly.
Thank you.
We did not know it was your last legislature meeting. Otherwise, we would have had a party. County administrator held out on that one.
She's not getting out of coming to the meetings, but she's just not going to be in the role anymore.
So eager we don't have a party, but thank you so very kindly from all of us at the legislature. It really kept things calm and moving in a very good way, and all our employees and us appreciate what you brought to the position.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks.
Okay, I know there's a few questions about COVID stuff, primarily around vaccinations and vaccines, so we'll get right to it. Let me share my screen here. Everybody can see screen two there. You can see the our typical presentation format that we use. Again, I say this every time we do it, but we have done this every legislative meeting since April, which covered also March. And it's a great format. I actually forwarded it to NYSAC and just showed them, you know, what we've been doing, and they were really appreciative of it, thought it was a remarkable way of documenting the chronological order of things and what we've done. So I'm not going to get into all of this. There's been a lot of activity over the past, since we met last, over the past 3-4 weeks, a real lot of activity, I would say, over the past week and a half. And I know Frank and Amy can talk more about that, as well as Dominic. So I'm not going to get into all the details here. We have had cases rise. This is consistent with what the state and the region is seeing, but it is not consistent to the significance or, you know, when we talk about our partners, Broome County, having 100-plus cases, other counties half our size having 150-plus cases in a day. We have not come near that in terms of a day, one-day high, which is good. Unfortunately, though, we are seeing a rise, and with that comes a rise in hospitalizations and, unfortunately, a rise in deaths. Nonetheless, I still think we are doing an excellent job of managing the disease much better than most. Our community deserves a pat on the back for continued responsiveness to distancing, to face mask wearing, to good personal hygiene, and to trying to minimize unnecessary gatherings to the extent they can. So, still doing well. I'm not going to go through all of the details of this because there's been a lot of activity. I think you have a lot more questions more on the vaccines and how that's being distributed, so I'll jump to that. This is a form that we've shown you all the time. You can see the amount of time spent, over $2.1 million worth of hours worked by staff time. Another $1.7 million in COVID-related expenses. I would say about $1 million of that is related to testing. And I'll go right to the next slide, which is our testing slide. Again, as you can see, a little over $1 million costs right now. Submitting regularly to FEMA for reimbursement. Negative news is we've not received a check yet, but positive news is that we have received the final obligation from the feds, so that should mean that the check is in the mail or should be forthcoming. I have not seen it. We have not cashed it yet. Drew and Rick have not told me that the money's magically appeared yet, but it should be en route, as we've been told. Pony Express, nonetheless, but it's here. It's coming, hopefully. So we'll let the legislature know. That'll be a good sign because that'll mean hopefully that subsequent submittals will then be start to follow thereafter and we'll start to see that reimbursement. We went to HHS last month, and I think it's on budget, capital, and personnel. We have asked for another appropriation of funding to continue testing for another 10 or 12, 20 weeks. So as you can see, our cost is $272,000. That's getting close to the $300,000 that allocated. This resolution, if passes budget, capital, and personnel on Monday, will come in front of you for the second meeting in January. And if approved, we will continue to do the free testing at our testing sites for our residents, which I think has been, again, an important piece of the puzzle to managing the disease and ensuring that folks are being able to get tested when they can without any barriers to maintain their health. So, we'll probably condense this as we move forward because we're starting to get into a serious amount of weeks. This first appropriation lasted longer than we anticipated, which is good. Vaccine safety and efficacy. Frank, I'm going to turn this over to you to talk a little bit about the vaccine.
Thanks, Jason. So we want to start with talking about the vaccine itself and reassure folks again that the vaccine is safe. It's gone through rigorous review. Yes, it happened fast over the course of this year, but it has still gone through all of the same reviews that are necessary for approval to get the emergency use authorization in place for both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine. And those are the two that are currently being administered. We talk about the clinical trials. We're trying to share that information on our website and really concentrate directing people to the vaccine portion of our website. There's a lot of information on there. We're getting inundated with phone calls and emails, and it's really challenging to keep up with all of those. So it's really important that we continue to focus people's attention to the website because there's a lot of good information there. New York State did its own independent review of the vaccines before they moved forward with distribution here. Of course, we all know by now that they passed those with no issues. And then there continued to be safety monitoring as the vaccine is administered. There's a system that we use for all vaccines for adverse events that have to be, that are required to be reported so that they can be tracked and understood. So all of that is in place and will continually be updated. What we've really seen as the issue that folks are facing, and it's rare and very uncommon, but the most common amongst issues is an anaphylactic reaction, right? And that happens for many vaccines for folks that might take them. And we are prepared to address if those issues were to happen at a vaccination site. I think an important thing to note is messenger RNA do not use the live virus. So it is not something where you can get COVID from the vaccine. That's just not possible. And it's also important to point out that this isn't a DNA altering substance that the vaccine is using. The messenger RNA goes through the cell wall. It got a lipid compound around it to help that happen. It dissipates quickly once the cell is able to identify and recognize what it needs to do to react to that RNA. It never enters the nucleus of the cell, so there's never any contact or anything that has to do with the DNA of the cell. We do hear that out there, and I just want folks to understand that that is not true and that the vaccine cannot cause COVID for you. Next slide, Jason. So vaccine distribution has begun. It started with the hospital system, at the beginning of this process, the priority group were hospital workers, particularly those that were dealing with COVID patients. And so the stage distribution system was designed to get the vaccine to them so they could administer it quickly. Here, the hospital reports over 1,500 doses have already been distributed. And so that's really good news in that population. And probably the best news recently is that we are planning going to open three pods this week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, to try to vaccinate 1,800 plus people. So we have partnered with Cayuga Health Systems once again. The hospital system has stepped up and really taken the lead in helping get us prepared to do these pods. The health department was allocated these doses, and we worked with the state to have them shipped directly to the hospital because they have more capacity for storage and management of the vaccine. And we are partnering by sharing staff and the state data system that health departments have in order to manage the pod. So it really is a true partnership, and we are extremely excited to be able to offer that. A press release went out today to alert folks. We did a direct mailing to healthcare workers on Monday as well. And I think to date, I can probably tell you the exact number of folks that we have registered right now. It was getting close to 1,300. Last time I looked, we passed. It's 1,308 currently registered, which is good news. We still have more slots. Wednesday is booked, but Thursday and Friday are still available for folks that meet the criteria. I should point out before I move on, I moved too quick from the hospital. They have distributed, they report 94% of the doses that they've received. So you may have heard the governor talking about some of the hospital systems having struggled to get out the vaccine they've received. That is not the case with CHS. They've done a great job of using the vaccine that they've received. So for individuals that are interested in what the eligibility is for current vaccine, I really would, again, encourage people to go to the vaccine webpage on the health department's website. All of the eligibility are listed there. Right now, we're still focused primarily on healthcare workers. This week, it expanded to include healthcare workers outside of the hospital, those that are seeing patients that are having direct contact with patients. It also includes non-medical professionals that might work in a healthcare setting that have contact with a patient. So think the receptionist or the front desk worker at your primary care office. They're not a nurse or a doctor, but they are having patient contact. They are eligible. So there is a link to register on our webpage. And when you go in, you have to answer some screening questions, both about your any contraindications to the vaccine, but also confirming that you are currently eligible, attesting that you're eligible to the for the vaccine now. So we would encourage folks to look to the website and who's eligible and how to register for the vaccine. We're currently doing this at the Shops at Ithaca Mall in the old Sears building. So back behind the mall, but before where the current testing site is located, is the entrance to the old Sears location. And CHS has been able to secure the use of that whole section of the mall. So it's a large open space, which is ideal for us to set up the point of distribution. So everyone should know that the clinics are all at the mall on the backside in the old Sears building. Of course, we're doing this in coordination with CHS, the state, and our regional hub. So Jason mentioned a little bit about this, but it's also important to remember that while we're excited and putting a lot of energy into getting folks vaccinated, we still needed to manage the disease. And as Jason pointed out, the numbers still continue to rise. Today, unfortunately, I believe we're reporting a 50 case day. So we're beginning to see, I think, some of what we expected from the Christmas holiday. So we'll be able to see over the next few days if that continues. So the important thing to know is we have to continue all the public health guidance. And that includes for people that do get vaccinated. We're still going to be asking folks to continue to follow the public health guidance after they get vaccinated. Because one, no vaccine is 100% effective. And two, it's going to take a while for us to get to herd immunity. So we need to make sure that we limit the cases in our community. So we're still going to be asking even those vaccinated to continue to wear masks, social distancing, hand washing, density reductions and such. We're still testing large numbers of people, and the number of testing sites has grown in the region thanks to CHS as well. The nurses and other staff continue to do case investigations and contact tracing on all positive cases. We're staffing up. We're using the state's virtual contact tracers. We're using staff that you've all allowed us to bring on to help make the daily phone calls. And we continue to announce any public exposures that we identify. The hospital has seen an increase in cases. That's probably the most troubling piece of all of this. Hospitalizations lead to intensive care stays that lead to, unfortunately, death. And we don't want to see that happening. So we need to continue to be vigilant to protect against that. And, of course, our public information team remains awesome in everything that they've been putting out, both on our website, through social media, through the regular media. We're really continuing to push that we need to maintain the guidance. We can see the finish line, but it's still a ways out there. And while we're doing vaccination, we need to continue to be vigilant until we get to a point where we have that herd immunity so we can limit additional disease exposure in the community.
That's it,
Jason.
Yeah. So I don't know that I have anything to add other than to reinforce what Frank said about not losing sight of managing. We're talking about the vaccine now, which is important, and we'll continue to do both, but we need to also continue to push the success that everyone's participating over the past 11 months to be vigilant.
Can you speak up a little bit more?
I sure can.
I'm hearing you.
Sure. Not a problem. I guess we'll just take questions.
Okay. Mike Lane.
Frank, on the number of doses that you've talked about, the number been administered, they all need a second dose. Do we have that vaccine for the second dose for those individuals? And I understand that in England they're mixing Moderna and the Pfizer. Are they talking about that at CDC, or what's going on?
I wish I knew what they were talking about at CDC, Mike. I can tell you we're not currently mixing vaccine. It is still the expectation, at least in New York to date, that if you get Pfizer, you get Pfizer the second time. You get Moderna, you get Moderna the second time. I'm sorry, Mike, I forgot the first part of your question.
Do we have enough to give these folks the second dose?
Yeah, the way that the system works is when the federal government distributes the first round of vaccine, they account for a second dose for all of those individuals, and those are subsequently shipped. Generally, what we're seeing as we're just now kind of getting to this point, that second dose of vaccine is shipped to the vaccinator about 5 to 7 days ahead of when it's due to be administered. And then there's a clinic set up to do that administration. So both doses don't come at the same time, but the system is designed to ensure that there is a second dose for every first dose that's administered.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Number of hands. I'll go down the list. Henry Granison.
Yes, thank you for the report. I just have a series of quick questions. Like, does the CMC have the capability to test for the UK strain?
I don't know. I think the way that's working right now is there's some criteria that every lab that's doing testing has to follow. And if there's any thought that it might be, it has to be sent to Wadsworth, the state public health laboratory, for that confirmatory testing. But please don't hold me to that. I think that's what the process is, but I haven't been following it that closely.
Can someone who has actively COVID, can they get vaccinated?
No. So in order to be eligible, you have to first meet the eligibility requirements, but you need to be done with your isolation period. So that 10 days, that's really because we don't want you coming to the pod and potentially infecting other people. So the same thing would stand for anyone that's in quarantine. If you're actively in isolation or quarantine, you shouldn't get vaccinated. But once you're out of either, you are eligible as long as you meet the other eligibility requirements.
Okay. So is that also true of people in nursing homes?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Yes, it's true for anyone.
Okay, I just was wondering, since they're in isolation in a nursing home, whether they get vaccinated or whether they have to wait until their time runs out and then they get vaccinated?
Correct. Anyone that is in that 10-day period has to wait until the 10-day isolation is over before they can be vaccinated.
Yeah, I was looking at the groups, and I know this has been controversial in other states, but what about people in jail or correctional offices? Where do they fall?
So probably the question we get the most is, where does this person or this group fall? And there's really a relatively short answer to that question. We don't know yet, and the state is the one that is setting those criteria. So right now we're in phase 1A, and we're working through the prioritization that the state has established in phase 1A. We do not have any additional information beyond that for phase 1B, C, or phase 2 or 3. The way the state has been handling it is each week they're updating the eligibility requirements, and as soon as we find out what those are, they will be added to our eligibility, and if we have vaccine and clinics available, those people will be able to get vaccine. For those populations that can't come to the site, and there should be a relatively small number of those people, but obviously those in corrections would meet that criteria, we will work with those organizations to make sure vaccine is available.
Okay. And my last question is just a general question about the nursing home situation. And do you have any theory of why they peaked after the holidays? Because I know in other parts of the state, they were peaking earlier.
Well, we've been extremely fortunate here that we didn't have nursing home cases or significant nursing home cases until the last several weeks. The holidays are certainly a part of it, but I think the bigger issue is just the general increase in disease in the state and the region. Right. So the more disease that is around us is the more opportunity there is for it to get into those closed systems at a nursing home. So I think the holidays played a role in our increased increased disease prevalence. And then that increased disease prevalence is ultimately what ends up putting those most vulnerable at risk in nursing homes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. Amanda Champion.
Thanks, Leslin, and thanks, Jason and Frank and Amy, for everything you're doing. I feel like maybe somebody asked this a couple weeks ago, but I'm just wondering where school nurses fall into this. Are they able to get vaccinated?
Yeah, they are eligible now. So as a healthcare provider that has direct patient-facing service, they are eligible, and I believe they are all registered.
Great. That's great. So they know about it and they can get in there. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Martha Robertson.
Thanks very much. Great to have this information, Frank. I know you've kind of been hamstrung by the state taking a long time to figure out, you know, how this is supposed to work. Quick question. When you say distributed, do you mean administered? I mean, when you said 1,500 doses are already distributed, did that mean shots in arms?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's the wrong term. Administered is the term we use when somebody has gotten vaccinated. Distributed is when it's been moved from one place to another.
Okay, so those numbers are actually vaccinated.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Are we experiencing any reluctance? I've heard that even medical professionals are like 30% reluctance to take, to get the vaccine, which seems really a high number among that community. Do you have any sense?
Yes, we are. And quite frankly, the biggest challenge we have in front of us over the next 6 to 9 months isn't making the vaccine available. It's getting people that are hesitant to be vaccinated. We've got a system in place. As soon as they give us vaccine, we'll make it available to people. And quite frankly, right now, we've had this pods open for 2 days, and we still have 600 empty slots based on the criteria. So there's a couple of things that play into that. The criteria is still fairly narrow of who's eligible, but there is reluctance amongst the population. I think we're seeing it in our healthcare workers as they're the first ones to go, but I think it's also going to be mirrored as we go through this process, and it's going to be really important for us to continue to get the word out about the safety and the efficacy of the vaccine. You know, I think one of the things, you know, we're asking everyone to do is how you can help us is get vaccinated when you're eligible and then tell everyone you know that you did it, right? That's really what's going to help us, because it's going to be that peer pressure, and it's a bad way to describe it. It's going to be that personal interaction about experience with the vaccine that's going to get those folks that are hesitant to take the step. Right. For those folks that are against it, they're going to be against it. And there's probably not a lot we can do. But there's a lot of folks that I would describe as hesitant and that are, you know, wanting to wait to see how it goes. And that personal touch from someone they know that says, you know what, I went and got it. I'm fine. Haven't had any reaction. You really should go do it yourself. Right. That's really what's going to help us, you know, move the needle on that.
And Frank, I think one other piece that we learned today is some people don't want to get it because they want to make sure that someone else can have it. So they feel that they're going to hold back and wait until it's much more available. And I think what we need to continue with the message is, if the phase is open and you're one of those people, it's your turn. And acknowledge that we're going to continue to push that vaccine out, but really we need everyone to take it when it's available to them.
Yeah. And how we protect those other people that we think should be ahead of us in line is to go get vaccinated, right? Because the more people that are vaccinated, the less likely that person that hasn't gotten it yet is going to get exposed to COVID. So, again, what Amy just said is key. If you're eligible, we're going to try to have a slot available for everyone in Tompkins County that's eligible. We need you to sign up and go get vaccinated.
So I appreciate that, but I've also heard stories about places where they brought the vaccine in, you know, put it in the 5-day refrigerator instead of a 90 degrees below refrigerator, and then couldn't use it because they didn't have enough people signed up. So that's like my walking nightmare. So this goes to some of my email questions. Can we start really signing up all sorts of people so that we build a list, and then where there's a way so that, like you said, you have 500 slots left for Thursday and Friday this week that are still open. Is that right?
Yes.
So, you know, if we get 500 people out of the next category of eligible people, that's still 500 people, even if, and then I saw somewhere on the website, like, if you missed your category, you can always sign up. If, you know, if you were in 1A and the county has moved on to 1B, you can sort of jump the line when you come around to it. If you know what I'm saying, I would like us to have a waiting list ready to go so that none of those slots goes by without somebody getting the vaccine. How are we allowed to do that? And how
do we make it? The short answer is no, but I'll explain to you how we address it, because I don't want to give the false impression that we're somehow wasting vaccine. Wednesday is full. Thursday and Friday, we still have to work to fill. And we will continue to beat the bushes to find people to take those vaccines. You can rest assured that we are not just putting it out there and hoping people register. We are actively trying to get people to register. As far as vaccine and how it's handled, that's why we wanted to partner with the hospital, and we wanted our allotment to go to them. They have a pharmacy and a pharmacist on staff who, this is what they do. And they are prepared and are doing all the management of the vaccine at the pod. There is a team of people that is managing the vaccine and filling syringes, and they do it based on how many people we have in the pod at the moment to make sure that we're not pulling or puncturing into a vial unless we know we have enough people to use that whole vial in the pod. So all of that is managed very closely. So rest assured, we are not wasting doses of vaccine. To the bigger question about can we get people registered early, the answer is no. We are using the state system, and because the criteria changes each week on who's eligible, they have to update the system to be able to manage people registering under that new criteria. So they're doing that every Sunday. So it's going to be where we're going to be able to register 1 week at a time ahead as the criteria, if the criteria changes. And quite frankly, getting people on a list doesn't really help us. What we need is when it's available, we need them to register in the system that we have. And we're not going to be able to move ahead, right? So the state sets the criteria on who's eligible. If we say, using this as an example, not that this is going to happen, but if we got to Friday and we had 300 slots open, we can't just say, okay, we're done with phase 1A. We're going to move on to phase 1B. It doesn't work that way. We have to communicate with the state that we think we have open slots to try to plan. That's what the regional hub is about, is to try to figure out how to get people to take those slots that do meet the criteria. But the state is really looking for that vaccine to be used on everyone that's in the current eligibility. And if we can't get people here, there is the chance that they may want to relocate that vaccine someplace else that has wanted people lined up. So we are managing this, and I appreciate all the support and interest in trying to help us get it managed logistically. But really, I think where you can help us is to get the word out about how important it is to get vaccinated yourself when it's eligible, to tell people now, hey, I'm not eligible, but I can tell you the minute I am, I'm signing up and I'm going. That's really what's going to help us, because we've got to get those folks that are hesitant to get over onto the side of wanting the vaccine. I have no doubt that anyone that wants the vaccine that is eligible, they're going to sign up. Right. So we're going to get them signed up. What we have to do is get the people that are hesitant that might not sign up without that extra push to have that extra push to get them there.
Okay. And the folks that we're targeting now, people who work in various places, are relatively easy to reach. Once we go out to the public, that's going to be much harder. And I hope we have a plan for you. You probably figured this out. Maybe, you know, that people are going to need to be reached by mail and phone. And I guess just to reiterate what I said on email, to please don't hesitate to ask us for more money or personnel or space or whatever you need to do, outreach is really what is going to be really important. And I hope we do all sorts of any kind of creative things that we can think of, we're ready to support, I would say.
I've heard you say, ask us for more money. So I'll make note of that, Mark.
She sat up like right fast in a hurry. Like,
heard that. No, I will say that Frank has not been shy of asking for when he needs monetary support, and I've given him the support he needs. So we appreciate that. And definitely have reiterated that with Frank and the team, that whatever we need to do, the project assistance for contact tracing is a perfect example of it. Hiring those folks created a big lift and a help. So I know I appreciate that flexibility and support, and we'll continue to do so as we need it. I'll add that Dominic has been working tirelessly with the PIO team, and Frank mentioned earlier that group of cadre have just been phenomenal. And they continue to just, I think, be extremely creative in the way they communicate. And Dom went through a little bit of his communication strategy earlier today. It's voluminous. You're right on point, Martha, with making sure we're hitting every avenue to communicate with folks. And it's changing, very quickly and every day. So what was the case on Wednesday of last week is totally different as today. And that's part of a little deja vu is we've experienced probably from a March-April timeframe that things are changing so quickly that what happened yesterday is old news by noon today. And, you know, I think one of the elements that really has made us stick out and continues to make us stick out as a community is our ability to be creative as we've come across challenges through this year. People are tired. I know that, and I think we need to continue to dig deep into working creatively to come up with those solutions, and they have. You know, Frank, Amy, the EOC folks, they've been creative. Our partners at CHS have been great with Dr. Scopolone and his team. So I know, I would agree with Frank. They're going to have a bigger challenge of getting convincing people to take the vaccine than administering it. And from our experience, at least from what I've seen the past week and a half, and Frank is definitely and Amy definitely have been on more calls than I have over the past few days. We are leaps and bounds ahead of the region in terms of organization and approach and collaboration, and that's because of the good relationship that we have with our community partners in CHS. And no doubt, I'm comfortable and confident that we'll be able to fill up those slots in the next few days and get that vaccine administered.
Okay, so should we send Dominic our crazy ideas and then he can handle them?
You can. He's got a lot of crazy ideas, so he's not short of them for sure. Dom, if you're on right now, do you want to just give a rundown of things?
Sure. Yeah, I can do that. Thanks, everyone, and thanks for the kind words about the PIO team. They've been a godsend throughout this to walk into the county with a team of people who were brought in quickly to learn about the disease and know some of the systems that exist here. So many of you received a message from me. We've collected all of the different editors of the local community newsletters across all of the county. We have a group of those that will get distributed everything that started this morning. Many of them already got our press releases before, but we're going to be more explicit about asking them to reprint that information. We've been pitching media stories for each of the different news organizations and outlets in the county, specifically focusing on some of the print outlets, making sure that they are going to get it out to some of the folks who don't have internet access as well. We're working with Cayuga Health System, too. They have a marketing budget and some plans around their own vaccine messaging. I mean, we're meeting with them this week about some of the creative that'll go along with that so we can tie the messaging together and co-brand a campaign. That'll include billboards. That'll include transit ads, print ads. One of the things we're thinking about is when we have a more thorough FAQ, likely following a couple of weeks when a little bit more is out, actually publishing that FAQ in print publications and getting it out in people's hands, including the shoppers in different rural communities as well. We did that twice throughout the pandemic, and that was very successful in the shopper ads. We'll also have some radio PSAs, and we'll do constant radio interviews, and then robocalls as well, which luckily reach all of the different landlines in the county that haven't turned off the service. So all of those will be many of the rural folks as well who don't have as much access to internet. That paired with the hundreds of questions we've gotten in for the town hall tomorrow night will really inform a lot of that as well, because we know what type of information the community is looking for. So that's the broad overview. I'm sure I missed a few things, but that's what we're planning for. This is really similarly to what we were doing in March, standing up for the whole COVID outbreak. Doing the same for the vaccine plus extra from what we've learned through the process.
Thanks. That's really exciting. That's terrific. Appreciate it.
Before Shauna goes, I'll take a turn. Thank you, Martha. Thank you, Don, Jason, Frank. You know, I want to reiterate, you know, for all of us that we have an incredible team of people who have been doing a lot of work to make this right. Our response to this disease has been great. We wish that we could stop people from doing the things they've been doing that, you know, cause community spread. We can't, but we have kept this relatively well under control in our community. Dom got out a video, but I do want to thank him because Dom and the entire PIO team, and I say this because I just remember we got pastors now preaching about getting the vaccine. Of course, they're attributing it to, you know, somebody else who's made it. But the word is definitely getting out. And I want to encourage, there's so many people who are going to be running for office this year. People, use that opportunity as you knock on doors. That's one way you can help. Frank is right. There are people who are, you know, afraid to take this vaccine, don't want to, but we want to encourage folks. And that's one way that we can be helpful, because I think our PIO team has got, they've got it down. I'm surprised they're not doing magic shows in the park yet. But I've seen just about everything being done, and really, really thoroughly appreciate it. I do want to encourage and remind you all while I'm here about different languages and allowing for that opportunity as well. I know we've talked about interpreter services so that people can get that, even in our robocalls, to see how we can make those happen. But you all have been doing incredible work around this, everything COVID, and thanks to all the people who have, and thank you, Dom, for your leadership in that area as well. Martha, I hear your question, and Frank, thank you for your very straightforward response. I wish that we could get a bunch of people signed up, but as you said, 1A is 1A, and 1A is probably going to change tomorrow, and we never know when 1B might come, and if there's ever going to be a 1B, we don't know. We don't control the state registration system, so we just have to wait, unfortunately. But I'm glad we're doing what we're doing in Tompkins County, working in partnerships, especially with the great partnerships we built throughout this entire pandemic with the health systems and with our other community partners. Word is getting out and people are responding. So all of us, what we can do is keep telling our constituents, do this, do this, do this for the safety of all of us in this community. Thank you all again. Shauna.
Yes, so one of our constituents today actually wrote on her Facebook page, she shared the Tompkins County Health Department Facebook post about the vaccination clinics, and she wrote, "I am so excited about this, and I have confidence in my county that it will go smoothly. I know my time will come, maybe even sooner than I had hoped." So I think that sums it up for many of us. I did have one question as far as how is CHS getting paid for the administration of the vaccine?
Yeah, it's a good question, Shauna.
Great stuff.
Go ahead, Frank.
I'm sorry. We are asking people that have an insurance card to bring it to the pod. There is no charge. There is no copay. If somebody doesn't have an insurance card, they will not be charged, nor will they be turned away. But for those that do have insurance, there is a part of the process that allows us to capture the information so CHS can bill for the administration in order to recoup some of those costs.
So if they're not able to bill, how are they getting paid?
That's a good question. It would probably end up being some sort of FEMA reimbursement that they would seek through us. I think right now we're all trying to just get the vaccine into people's arms, collect money from insurance companies whenever we can, and then, you know, count the coins later. It's tough. It's tough for them, right? I mean, they don't have endless resources either. But it just goes to show their commitment to our community that, you know, they're concerned about where the money's coming from. And obviously we're taking some steps, but that is not a question that they bring to the table when we're talking about how we're going to do this. They want us to do it, and then we'll figure those things out when the time comes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or information sharing from any of you in the EOC?
I just have two more things to add. Although I will notice Frank's very non-descriptive answers on how to pay for things. Other things he's very descriptive on, but then he turns to me on the pay for things. No, just several things I think just to leave you with. One is, tomorrow night we have the COVID town hall with Dr. Stallone from CHS, along with Frank and myself and Amy. Amy and I will be volleying questions back and forth to Dr. Stallone and Frank. Got a lot of questions in And we're prepared to kind of go through that to the best we can. Again, if you're going to get vaccinated, the best thing you can do is post that on your Facebook or Twitter page. You guys have great networks from your constituents. You're able to message a lot, and is a key piece to being able to message this out. And lastly is just to have patience as we go through this. A lot changes. It's, you know, over the weekend, from New Year's over the weekend, I know Frank and Amy were on a lot of calls. I was on one with them, and it changed from Sunday to what was done from Thursday to Sunday. So patience will be important as we go through this, but we do have great people working on this and a great team in the community to be able to distribute the vaccine. So that's all I just wanted to close on, Pleasant.
Jason, if I just may add one additional thing, is as you are messaging right now, not only get the vaccine, but remain vigilant on the other aspects. I think that's the piece, is people are so excited for the vaccine, and we are too, but it's going to take some time. So we have to continue all those other behaviors that we've been really pressing on. And I think, you know, just reminding each other of that, because we want to rush ahead, but we can't get there unless we really continue that community safety piece.
Great point.
And Leslin, I'm sorry, they prompted me too. I would also just encourage folks that there's no line. You're not losing your place in line if you don't get it the very first minute that it's available to your group, your eligibility session. What we do is we add eligibility. So anyone that was previously eligible is still eligible for any clinic that becomes available. We're just adding more people to the pool that becomes. So I want folks to feel comfortable. We're going to do everything we can to make sure they know when they're eligible and are able to get vaccinated, but they don't have to fear that if they miss that one moment in time, they're not going to get vaccinated. Once you're eligible for every time that we distribute vaccine moving forward. So, you know, be patient with us. We're going to make it available. We're hopefully going to make it available to more people than we can than actually sign up, right? I mean, that's our goal. We want to make sure nobody goes without that wants to get vaccinated. So hang in there with us. Please be patient.
Thank you. Henry.
Yes. A friend of mine asked the other night whether legislators are considered essential people, like they were in Congress.
Not Tompkins County.
Not Tompkins County. Wow.
Nice try, Henry. I've been looking at the categories to see where I fit, but I don't fit there.
We'll let you know.
Thanks, Henry. Waiting for old.
Martha.
Yeah, me and you.
I have the last word. Go ahead.
So this is, you just said something, Frank, a little bit. I really want to nail this down. The way I understand the way the thing work, the vaccines work, is that we don't know whether it keeps you from actually getting infected or transmitting it. It just keeps you from getting sick with a vaccine, if I understand correctly, which is to say, just like right now, any of us could be carrying and transmitting it asymptomatically, in a sense, that will still be true after we're vaccinated. Is correct. That correct?
That is correct.
So that's like a really big message about just because you're vaccinated doesn't mean you throw your mask away.
Correct. Absolutely.
So are we going to have like a handout or something when people get vaccinated? Here's what this means, and, you know, give them a follow on card or something. Is that part of the system?
That's a good question. We haven't gotten to we haven't done a first dose yet. So we haven't gotten to second doses to really be doing that. But yeah, it will be clear to folks that they should still remain following the public health guidance. It is our expectation that the data will ultimately prove out that it does help prevent transmission, but we just don't have that data yet. So all we have data on is that it will, you won't get sick from it. If you're immunized.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. I have to find a new word aside from robust. Really great information sharing. Thank you all very much. As you know, like you and the rest of the community, we're all anxious. Want to know, you know, how things are rolling out, what's going on.
where do we fit in line, Henry? and so we really appreciate seriously all the work you've been doing, and thank you for keeping us informed. I'm sure there'll be more questions to come. Thank you very much. My BDOM and the PIO team for the webpage, the vaccination part of it. There's a lot of information there. So thank you very, very much for getting that up as quickly as you did. Anything else for our folks and the EOC COVID report? All right. I intended earlier to, because I know there was some staff waiting, but I was too anxious to hear this report and didn't get to the staff. So if you will bear with me, I see Nick and Barb Ekstrom, and at one point Lisa Monroe. Lisa might have left us, was here. I know there's some resolutions, so I'd like to shuffle things around a little bit so they don't have to hang out with us for the rest of the time while we go through the rest of our agenda. So let me see if I can find all the resolutions. Oh, most of them are on consent agenda, actually.
Yes. Right.
So that's a good idea. Thank you, Kathy. I don't know what I'm going to do without you.
Except for Barb's.
Barb's is not. All right. Well, let's go to consent agenda, and then we'll take Barb's, okay?
Jay Franklin as well.
I don't see Jay. Oh, yeah, there's Jay. Okay. I only paid $800 and something for these glasses. I can't see nothing out of them. I have to get some new ones. all right, let's see here. Let's go to the consent agenda. These are resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. Let's run through the appointments very quickly. Advisory board appointments, Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Environmental Management Council, Reggie Teasley, Chair for Year 2021, on the Health and Human Services Committee, Development Disability Subcommittee, Nancy Salzman, Community Member Representative, Mental Health Subcommittee, Catherine Dean, Community Member Representative, Office of the Aging Advisory Committee, Sandra Pollock, term expires December 31st of 2023, Youth Services Board, Tamer Els Harbagi. Did I say that correctly? Hopefully I did. I apologize if I did not. At large representation. And Magdalena Smith, at large representation. Board of Health, Samara Touchton, at large representation. On the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Air Services Board, Jennifer Tavares, at large representative. Those are all the advisory board appointments. And the resolutions, Budget and Capital Personnel Committee, Resolution A, Delegation of Authority to Authorize Certain Tax and Solid Waste Fee Refunds under $500, ID 9702. On the Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution B, Scheduling a Public Hearing for New York State Office of Community Renewal, Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Securities CARES Act Assistance, ID 9817, Resolution C, a resolution urging Governor Andrew Cuomo to invest in aging services, Resolution D, Budget Adjustment, COVID-19 Funding, March 5th, 2020 to March 15th, 2021, Health Department, ID 9772, Resolution F.
Pull it, please.
Thank you.
Pull. F?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
F is pull. On the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution G, authorization to execute a supplemental funding agreement, SA number 2 construction, with New York State Department of Transportation for PIN 3756.53 Etna Lane Bridge, County Route 109, over Fall Creek, BIN 3314180, Town of Dryden, ID 9801. Resolution H, authorization to execute a supplemental funding agreement, SA number 1, construction with New York State Department of Transportation for PIN 3756.52, Central Chapel Road Bridge, County Route 115, over Boise Creek, BIN 10460020, Town of Caroline, ID 9800. Under Government Operations Committee, Resolution I, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under ID 9696. That's the consent agenda. May I have someone move the consent agenda, please? Moved by Amanda Champion, seconded by Martha Robertson. Let's vote on the consent agenda.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Vince John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries. Thank you very much. And now let's go to FTSE's and Infrastructure Committee and get Resolution M. Mike?
Sure. Resolution M, award of contract for the upgrading and operations of the Tompkins County Recycling and Solid Waste Center pursuant to General Municipal Law Section 120-W. That's ID 9793, and I move it.
May I have a second, please? Seconded by Deborah Dawson. Discussion? Go ahead.
I just want to say we've reviewed this several times. Committees has looked at it. 10 members of the legislature were at the committee meeting. We had another presentation, thanks to Barbara Ekstrom and her staff, at our last legislature meeting. And I was just totally happy about the cost of the new contract, but I think they've done a good job in negotiating it and trying to keep the costs down. So I hope that this will get unanimous consent.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Any other comments? All right. Let's vote.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Yes.
Rich Jen?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously. Barbara's smiling. Thank you very much, legislators.
Yep.
Thank you, Barb, for hanging in. And I have Jay Franklin. I have Resolution P, I believe, Government Operations. Jay, is that the one you're waiting for?
Yep, that's the one I'm waiting for.
I could give you a few more, but I figure this one.
I'm good.
Amanda?
Yep, this is a good one. All right, where is it? All right, so I will go ahead and move Resolution P, waiving renewal requirement for senior disabled real property tax exemption, ID 9836.
Moved by Amanda. May I have a second, please? Seconded by Henry Granison.
And Leslyn, if I could just say something first.
Go ahead.
So GEO just met earlier this afternoon, and we did make one change, which I think I have up here, which was passed. We took out one whereas section and added in another. And I can share that if you want me to read that out loud.
Yes, please.
Okay, so if you have the resolution in front of you, we're taking out the third whereas that begins, whereas the governing body of the assessing unit, we're going to strike that whole thing. And what we're going to add in instead says, whereas the governor has since signed into law Chapter 381 of 2020, making the renewal waiver mandatory for all assessing units across New York State. And so that's an added whereas, and that passed in committee. And then the other just small tweak was in the fourth whereas, we're changing the words executive order into the word law, because it's now a law.
Line 17.
The last words.
Okay. Got it.
And Jay did a good job explaining it to the GO committee. I'm sure he's going to answer any questions that folks have.
So those are relatively substantive amendments that you're making, or changes. So I just want to make sure that Henry the seconder is fine with all of that.
Yes.
Well, that's what came out of committee.
That's what came out of committee. Okay. Okay.
Yep.
I didn't hear that part.
All right.
Okay, good. Questions, Martha?
So now I'm confused. Is it an executive order or a law?
Yeah, well, on December 18th, he issued an executive order. And then when the legislature came back into session on the 28th, this was part of it. So at first, it was a local option when it was the executive order. And that's when the resolution was written. And also that morning, we mailed out renewal applications. That's my luck, you know. If I would have known or waited a day or two, you know, we could have not caused some confusion. But now that it is in law, it is mandatory. And this resolution just gives me a couple excuses when I can require a renewal application if I think someone moved, or there was a death, or they added ownership. Other than that, you know, we have about 1,800 senior applications that typically are renewed each year, about 150 disabled. So this will allow us to roll over those exemptions on the 2021 roll and not have to have all of the seniors and disabled individuals come down to our office and file. This does not affect any other exemption, though. The agricultural land, clergy, housing trust exemption for INHS and Habitat houses, all of those still need to apply. So it's confusing a bit. And once we got all of the seniors into a routine, I hope they don't break that routine once we get to 2022.
This is only for 2021.
Correct.
Is that right? And Amanda, would you mind reading the new whereas again? It went by me too far.
Yep. It will say, whereas the governor has since signed into law Chapter 381 of 2020, making the renewal waiver mandatory for all assessing units across New York State.
Thanks very much.
All right, thank you. Any other discussion? And Nick, I'm assuming you were waiting for the same one, right?
He's giving a presentation under the housing
report. Oh, you're giving a presentation.
Yeah.
Got it. Got it. All righty. Roll call vote.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich Stone?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morin?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Do I have other folks waiting aside from Nick?
Looks
I see Lisa Monroe is back, but Lisa's, I think, was already passed on consent agenda. Yours was all taken care of, Lisa. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, do you want to do the health department's resolutions, Frank's here? I don't know who's waiting for those.
Pardon me?
Frank Koop is here. I don't know who's waiting for his resolutions.
Frank, are you waiting for your resolutions? Are you just hanging out with us?
No, I was waiting for the one that got pulled so I can answer.
Okay. All right. So why don't we take that? So on the Health and Human Services, Shana Black, you want to take up F?
Yes. I would like to move the Budget Adjustment Immunization Action Plan Flu Funding, Health Department ID 9771.
Thank you. May I have a second, please? Second by Glenn Morey. Discussion. Martha, you pulled it. Go ahead.
This is a question that's probably in email right now, but I want, since Frank is here, I wanted to ask. I'm a little worried about confusing people about vaccination for flu and vaccination for COVID. So I don't know if you've got a, if the ads themselves are going to, you know, how clear they'll be. And in particular, it might also, since we're spending money on ads, is it possible to kind of say like a tagline or something for the COVID vaccination information, call blah, 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 or something like that?
Yeah, so the PIO group has been working to develop all of the information about this. This is a grant, our Immunization Action Plan grant we get every year. They added money to it specifically for flu, so it has to be spent on flu advertisement, but we will be creative. If anyone from the state is listening, completely within the confines of the grant deliverables, but we have a really good PIO group that's going to make any dollars we have, as well as the hospital's committed some, so we can put together a communications plan for both, mainly for COVID, but obviously we want to get the message out about flu as well.
Great. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Is that it? Okay. Let's vote.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 no's.
Thank you. That carries. Shani, you have one more? You want to go ahead? Resolution.
Sure. I'm happy to do Resolution L, Appropriation from Contingent Fund Terminal Pay, Health Department ID 9770.
May I have a second, please? Seconded by Amanda Champion. Discussion. Vote. It's a minute.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 no's.
All right. Thank you very much.
Don't forget we're excited.
Yeah, I'm going back to the top of my agenda. No one else waiting for any other resolutions, right? Just making sure. No. All right, so let's go back. to our agenda, back to our agenda again, and to Finance Director, Director of Finance, Rick Schneider. Happy New Year, Rick.
Happy New Year to you all. I'd like to share a little bit in sales tax tonight. I'll share my screen here if I can, and we'll be bringing to you what happened in November. There. Are you viewing that for November?
Yeah.
Very good. Last time we met, we only had a verbal report for you, and we estimated that the sales tax would be down about 14%. Well, that came true. If you look in the center of this spreadsheet, you can see that for the month of November, we were down 14.34%, which is not very good. That's the bad news. As of the end of November, moving over here to the year-to-date portion, you can see that we are down approximately $4.2 million from last year. So that's a 12% decrease year over year. So our early projections came in right on the mark, except that it's bad news that it was a 14% decline for the month of November. We are waiting on our final December sales tax receipt so that we can bring that to you hopefully at our very next meeting if everything goes okay. They do have three checks or three distributions that the state makes to us, and we won't be receiving that final check until January 13th or 14th, but it looks like it may very well be in time to report to you at our next legislative meeting. And that's all I have for this evening. I'll take any questions that you might have.
Questions for Rick? And I can't see you anymore, so shout it out.
I've got a question, Leslyn.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Rick, is this payment that we're expecting for December, is this the one where they take out the AIM and the hospital?
No. That was in this month. The one that I just presented to you for November, the AIM payment came out already.
So this 81% that we're looking at, that's net of all the money they're taking back. So it might not be as bad as it looks.
Well, it's, if you're comparing year after year to year, we had the same thing happen last year. So, you know, it is apples to apples, unfortunately. They took an AIM payment out last November, and they took the AIM payment out this November. So it all is, at least it's consistent.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other questions for Rick? Right. Oh, question from Mike Lane.
Just kind of following up on what Deborah was saying. I guess the question might be, how much sales tax would we have had if they hadn't taken out the AIM and hospital payments?
Well, no hospital payments have come out yet. They'll be taking them out in four quarterly payments starting very soon, within the next couple months. But the AIM payment is, I'm trying to remember, it's roughly $375,000 in that ballpark there.
So instead of being 14% down, we might have been 12% down or something.
But like I said, we're comparing it to last year's numbers, which also included the AIM distribution or AIM withholding.
I understand. Doesn't make it any more palatable.
Now, if we have a really good December, and we're hoping that we will, especially since there's a lot of true ups that go on during that last payment for the year, we're still hoping that we can come in at, you know, approximately $4.5 million. Down from the previous year, which is not as bad as some of the worst case scenarios that we ran by you earlier in the spring and in the summer. You know, $4.5 million cut in sales tax. That's not nearly as bad as what we thought at one time.
All right. Thank you very much, Rick.
You're welcome.
So legislators, again, I'm going to ask your indulgence because usually we take a little break at this time. Kathy, let me know. And Nick, I did see you here to do a little bit of a report on the HED. So if we can just get that, you know, done so that Nick doesn't have to sit around and hang out with us, then we'll take a break. Is that okay? So Mike Sigler, thank you very much. Housing and Economic Development Committee, you want to report and...
Great, yeah, thank you. I'm going to try to share my screen as well here to get this presentation loaded up here. All right. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Great. So I'm going to just give an update on where we are with a proposal that came through HED back in August regarding a change to the county's hotel room occupancy tax law. Just quick highlights, and just do a little recent background. We'll talk about the survey that we did for the small lodging establishments, an update for where we are in talking with Airbnb, just a little recap of why this proposal came about, and then talk about what the next steps would look like. So back in August, STPB endorsed a recommendation to make the room tax 5% for all lodging establishments. Currently, any lodging that is 10 rooms or fewer is taxed at a 3% rate. that recommendation went up to HED later that month, and HED passed both schedule a public hearing and to make that change. The public hearing was held on September 15th, but then the proposal was tabled after that, pending two things that were, unresolved. One was to do a survey of these, small lodging, operators, and also to ensure that Airbnb, was going to cooperate with this proposal, in light of the, voluntary agreement we have with them. So, I'm just going to give a quick update of the survey first, and then we'll talk about Airbnb. So we held a survey from in late September for really three things we were trying to gain out of that. One was to get a better understanding about small lodging establishments in the county. You know, what are these properties like? Who are they? Second, to see what sorts of initiatives that the tourism program invest in that are most relevant or most important to these properties. And third was to understand the potential impact that the room tax increase could have and gauge whether there was support for that within the community. We got 26 responses, which was a bit disappointing. We were hoping for more. We estimate there's over 980 of these properties operating in the county. So that's something to bear in mind as we go through the results. So we have a few questions we asked about, you know, whether these operators of small lodgings, see value in the things that we're currently investing room tax in. And we actually saw pretty good results here. About half, just under half, indicated that funding for the Convention Visitors Bureau and community beautification was either somewhat important or very important to them. Whereas more than half of the respondents indicated that support for arts and culture and other nonprofits and investments in capital, investments in outdoor recreation were somewhat or very important. So all told, I think this tells a story that, you know, this group does see some value in what we're currently doing with room tax. When we asked about the impacts they foresee for this tax change. The results were decidedly more mixed. You'll see the lighter colors here on the left indicate disagreement. So we saw that, you know, more than half of the respondents, disagreed that a 5% tax rate was appropriate for them. Sort of split opinions as to whether or not guests would be willing to pay 5% or visitors would change their travel plans. More than half, you know, did believe that a 5% tax rate would have an adverse impact on their business. And about a split in terms of whether the benefits of such a tax increase would be worth the cost. All in all, the final question we had was whether they would support increasing the room tax from 3% to 5%. And we had 54% say no, and the remainder either undecided or in support of it. So definitely some understandable, I think, not necessarily, fully on board in terms of that community. So that's a bit of the recap of the survey. I can, if there are specific questions following the meeting here, we want to dive into, we can certainly get into that a little more detail. But like I said, we only had 26 responses, so it wasn't the most in-depth survey, unfortunately. Where we have had a bit more progress and success, I think, is in engaging with Airbnb. And December, I should preface this and say that we currently have a voluntary collection agreement in place with Airbnb, which does allow either party to terminate the agreement basically at convenience. So a big motivation for our decision to table this proposal was to make sure that we would have cooperation from Airbnb going into this. The risk of losing that agreement would be pretty serious in terms of a financial impact and in terms of also just how to clean up that mess. So we established contact with their legal team. I should say big thanks to Jonathan here for making that outreach and getting that connection rekindled. And we have learned that they are willing to cooperate with the law following its adoption by the county and modify the voluntary collection agreement as appropriate. So that's great news. I think that means that, it's a good sign that we can say with pretty high confidence that this is a viable proposal to make sure that they'll be in compliance. I just want to kind of recap here as we're getting close to the end, and I know folks have been sitting for a while. The rationale for this proposal was, based in the analysis that showed that our current two-tiered tax rate is really no longer needed to achieve its intended purpose, which was to sort of incentivize demand for these smaller lodging properties, these sort of inns, bed and breakfast type of properties. The evidence from our own room tax collection and independent sources are showing that the market for this type of lodging has grown substantially in about the last 8 years, and that, a 5% tax rate across the board is consistent with our neighboring counties in the region. So, I think the STPB's, review of that showed that it was really, time to sort of say that this was not necessary anymore to stimulate demand for people to stay in smaller lodgings. So that's basically the rationale we're looking at here. Next steps, should the county move forward with this, we would present this local law back to the legislature the next meeting in 2 weeks. And following adoption, staff would work with Airbnb to revise the voluntary collection agreement. We finance department would also be engaged here to notify the appropriate parties, the lodging establishments this would affect, and prepare internal processes for change. And our goal would be to have this take effect March 1st, so that it would be in place for the second quarter of our tax collection cycle. So that's basically where we're at right now. I'll just leave it there. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Nick. Just as a reminder to folks, on January 19th, as Nick said, we do have a local law, so we'll have a hearing as well as presentation of the local law to amend what has been in place, which exempted B&Bs and small inns from taxes that exceed 3%. And that's a two-tier system he's talking about. So thank you, Nick, for the presentation. Discussion, Henry and Mike Lane.
Yes, thanks for the presentation, Nick. I know that the city got their hotel occupancy law also approved by the governor. How would that work in connection with an increase here?
That's a good question. So the city got their the governor signed the bill for the city's hotel tax. They still have to adopt a local law. My understanding is they want to move quickly on that so they can begin using that fund for the conference center. The way it would work here is that if you have, let's just say, for example, you have a vacation rental and it happens to be in the city of Ithaca and it's currently operating, as of March 1st, the county's rate would go from 3% to 5%. And as of whatever effective date the city's tax takes effect, you would have an additional 5% tax there. It's going to be a bit of a coordination question. We've notified Tom Knipe about the timeline we were looking at here for this change, so that he's aware of it. This change would take effect before anything that happens at the city, just because of the timing of council meetings. So,
but the agreement we have with Airbnb is just between the county and Airbnb. The city does not have that agreement, right?
That's correct. Yeah, the county. My understanding is the city wants to establish its own voluntary collection agreement. So. We would coordinate with the people we've been working with there to let them know the city is also moving forward with that. So,
one last question. For the 982 businesses, how did you, because you don't have access to who does Airbnb, right?
Correct. We don't have a master list of all the Airbnb properties.
So how were you able to get the 982?
So we have a few different sources we've used for that. The most reliable is a report that the CVB gets monthly called alltherooms.com, and it's an electronic sort of spider that crawls on the web on a regular basis to search for properties within certain geographic parameters, and then also does analysis of various elements of those properties and what their occupancy looks like and what their rates are. It's kind of like it's the closest thing we have right now to a market analysis for both Airbnb and for VRBO, which also used to be known as HomeAway. So that's the basis for that number. We have other vendors that have looked into this too and have given us some differing numbers, but that, they're all kind of in the range of between 800 and 1,200.
Okay, thank you.
Kathleen?
Nick, I'm wondering about the beds and breakfasts. First of all, do you know how many there are?
And Oh, go ahead.
And second, were they surveyed separately? If not, what percentage of the 26 that surveys that came back do we know which ones they were? Were they anonymous, for example? I'm a little concerned that we're discounting 54% apparently that said they don't like this.
That's a fair point. In terms of bed and breakfast, we have currently registered with the county, I believe, and I'd have to double check my number, roughly 100 or so
really?
Properties that are registered in this category. Of those, several identify as bed and breakfasts. However, many of them also market themselves on Airbnb. So, you know, the sort of clean line between what is an Airbnb and what is a bed and breakfast is blurred quite a lot in recent years, as those types of properties list rooms on platforms like Airbnb. We have let me see.
I guess if it looks like a bed and breakfast and has rooms and has breakfast, it's operated traditionally, that's a bed and breakfast. I'm not talking about Airbnbs.
Right. Well, the difference is that Airbnb is a platform. So anybody that has a property that can be listed on there can list rooms. It doesn't necessarily have to be a private residence. It could be a bed and breakfast or an inn. And we do see that in our market and across this region. So.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of concerned for those folks that have traditional beds and breakfast.
Thanks, Mike. Deborah?
Yes, thank you, Leslyn, and thanks for this information, Nick. I have a couple of procedural questions. First of all, Leslyn, you said something about if we had this on the agenda for the local law at our next meeting, we'd have to do a public hearing. I understood from Nick's presentation there already had been a public hearing.
That's correct.
Okay, so we don't need a public hearing.
No.
Okay. And then my second question is, when we raise rates like this, do we need to get a sign-off in Albany, or can we just do it by ourselves?
So this is just in our local law. Our state enabling law allows us to have a hotel room occupancy tax at 5%. It says nothing. The state enabling law is completely silent on this question of having a lower rate for different sizes of properties. So this was a decision that was made at, I believe, 2001 approximately, when the rates were increased from 3% to 5%.
Thanks for clarifying that, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And sorry about that confusion, Deborah. That's my fault. Anything else? Nick, thank you. I appreciate the information. Again, I apologize. I kept saying, what is he waiting for? I didn't get the information that you were coming to present. So thank you for it. It's good to get information before we have to vote on this at our next meeting. Yes, we'll see you next time.
All right. Have a good night.
Have a good night. Thank you. It is 7:47, and as promised, let's take a break, and we'll be back at 8 p.m. and power through the rest of it. Thank you, legislators. All right. We are back. Please let me know you're here so I know we have a quorum. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I don't know. 3 of us, 4, 5, 6, 7. I need one other person. 8. Thank you very much. We'll back to my agenda. We've gone all different kinds of ways on this agenda. Are any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? No. Moving on to the standing committee reports, starting with Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Leslyn. We've not met since the last legislature meeting, but we're meeting this coming Monday on the 11th at 3 o'clock. And as Jason said earlier, it'll be the first day of work for Ruby Pulliam, our new Commissioner of Human Resources. So we will be delighted to welcome her to the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee that day. And I really, really do want to add my thanks to Lisa Holmes for being interim. That was my dog agrees with me.
Keep blocking comments.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay.
Doggone.
So, family that need attention.
I don't know what that was. You're probably still here. I'll finish quickly. But Lisa did an amazing job this year. Wasn't just kind of handling the, you know, holding the reins for human resources. There were some major, major projects that some of which we kind of have known about for several years that we wanted to do, like change the retiree healthcare plan. With Jason, she put together the whole early retirement incentive. Had to understand and explain to staff ever-changing rules about medical leave and family leave and paid leave and unpaid leave. And I don't even remember all the kinds of leave that Lisa helped our staff to understand. You know, helping on all those Friday town hall calls with the staff. It was seamless. Lisa was just stepped in with such competence and grace and warmth about all of these difficult things that we were asking our staff to absorb and take on, including, let's remind us about the furloughs that she and Jason sort of had to work through with staff that were basically being asked to either to accept a different job if they wanted to stay with the county. So Lisa, thank you so very much. It was a great 5 years in the last 19 months, right? So we really, really appreciate everything that you did. It was an incomparable job, and thank you.
Martha.
That's my report.
Thank you to your puppy, too.
You bet. She says thank you. That's my report.
Thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee and Corman Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have not met since our last meeting, and we're going to meet again on January 27th. That's a Wednesday at 3:30, and I'll go over more of what we're going to do at our next legislative meeting, the 19th.
All right.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Sorry, I forgot to ask you if there are any questions to Martha or an Ian at this point. No? Okay. Tompkins Intergovernmental Relations Committee, the Tiger Committee. Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you, Leslin. We have not met since last legislature meeting. We meet tomorrow at 11:30. It'll be a little different than usual, but I think some introduction of a couple of topics, including independent redistricting in New York. We have a little bit of information about the new state senator for four of our towns, Peter Oberacker. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And Mike Ziegler says he can try to schedule the senator to join us next month at the Tiger meeting. But we are going to hear from our Cornell Government Affairs folks and Sue Dale Hall from the Child Development Council. And just one more thing, I'm going to try to get together a resolution for the committee on NYSAC's suggestion for a blue ribbon commission on intergovernment, you know, working with New York State, partnering with New York State on programs and trying to find new ways of squeezing blood from a stone, I guess. So that's tomorrow at 11:30.
All right.
And I would just mention, usually tomorrow would be the State of the State speech by the governor. It looks like that's being pushed to Monday. That's not usually the budget speech, but it gives an in-depth preview of what the budget looks like. So we don't know yet what time it'll be Monday, but I'll let y'all know as soon as we do hear. So thanks.
Thank you, Martha. Any questions from anyone? No? All right. Moving on. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Mike Ziegler, Vice Chair.
Hi. After the last time we got that seat on the IDA all squared away, obviously our leader has now gone off to greener pastures in Albany. So We are now putting together the agenda for the upcoming meeting. On there, obviously there was an appetite for adding two positions to the IDA. I've asked Jonathan to come up with a resolution saying our intent so that we can go to the state and ask them to add those two seats and see where we can go from there. So that's going to be on the agenda. And anything else you guys want, I mean, I'm thinking we're going to try to spend the balance of the community funds, you know, at that next meeting. So if Martha wants to come, you know, we'll try to spend it all at one meeting. So that'll be great. That's about it. So thanks.
Questions for Mike? I'm counting on you spending.
We're flush in that fund, so.
They actually right. spend Republicans.
Okay, Downtown Facilities Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Leslin. Downtown Facilities has not met since the last Ledge meeting. We will meet on the 14th of January at 4 p.m. on this station. That's my report.
I can tell when it's getting late. People start getting very humorous. Thank you, Dave. On the 14th. Good. Any questions for Dave? All right. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Leslin. The Public Safety Committee has not met since our last meeting. But I do have a couple resolutions that are left over. I have Resolution J, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, Department of Probation and Community Justice, ID 9784, and I'd move that motion.
I have a second, please. Seconded by Glenn Morey. Any discussion on it? I have a vote.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich Stone?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Glass?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslin McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
And that carries unanimously. Go ahead.
Then I have Resolution K, ID 9749, appropriation from contingent fund, replacement pay, and terminal pay reimbursement sheriff's office. And I would move that.
May I have a second, please? Seconded by Glenn Morey again. Discussion? Roll call vote.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mark Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslin McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Anything else, Rich? It carries unanimously.
I would just mention that our jail population as of today is at 27, which is near getting very close to our lowest numbers we've seen. Not quite sure why it's so low right now. I know there were a bunch of state-ready people that had been transferred around the time of our last meeting, but it's gone down from there. Beyond that, I note our next meeting is January 21st at 3 o'clock. I anticipate we will be discussing the status of the police reform working groups that are meeting. Happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions for Rich?
Could you just repeat when that meeting is, please?
January 21st at 3 o'clock.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Moving on to Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you very much. We met Monday, December 21st, And we had a very nice presentation by Kit on homeless services, Code Blue, and some of the changes that were caused with COVID-19. She talked about our shelters and where the numbers were. We've also had some churches that are currently housing people right now. Another thing that we talked about was we did pass many of the all of the resolutions we had this evening. I do want to thank Lisa Monroe for writing the resolution that is urging Governor Cuomo to provide funding for aging services. Rumor had it that this was going to be part of the cuts that we saw in the upcoming budget, and her association that she's a part of did a similar resolution or similar statement, and she turned it into a resolution. So thank you very much, Lisa, for doing that resolution for us. And our next meeting is going to be, we are changing this up. So if you're interested in HHS or if you're a committee member, please make note. We are going to have the meeting Tuesday, January 12th at 10 a.m. And we are going to be joined by Jeanette Batiste Harrison, whom is one of the consultants that we hired for the public health, mental health integration consultant. And she's going to give us an update on how the integration is going. And the biggest part of the integration is obviously communicating with staff, seeking input from the stakeholders as well as staff so that we have a successful integration process. So she is going to just give us an update on that. We've been moving pretty slow in that. I'm actually part of that group, and we have been moving very, very slow due to COVID. Obviously, Frank's been very busy with the response to that. So right now we're just in the process of defining values and a mission statement and working on that. And that has taken quite a while. So please feel free to attend. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you. Any questions for Shauna? Okay, no questions. Thank you, Shauna. Moving on to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, we met last year on, on December 17th. Most of what we did has been covered in the resolutions that we've already taken tonight on the consent agenda with respect to the agreements with the New York State for the two bridges and also the solid waste contract that we have gone through. The recycling, couldn't say solid waste anymore, it's the recycling and materials management contract. We'll be meeting again on Thursday the 21st at 9 o'clock, and be glad to take any questions. Unless Ann, you've got anything you want to add?
No, nothing else.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike? All right, seeing none, we'll move on. Government Operations Committee, Amanda Champion, Chair.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Leslyn. Government Operations met earlier today, and we talked about the one resolution we already voted on from assessment, and we also talked about the resolution that we're about to vote on about scheduling a special election. Our next meeting is this coming Thursday at 1:45. We have not too much on the agenda. We will be getting an update from Stephen DeWitt and Elizabeth Cree will be coming from the Board of Elections to talk about a little bit more about this special election for District 2 if people have more questions. Also to hopefully give us some more input and information about our 2021 legislature elections. And hopefully by then, the state will have some more information and they'll be able to share that with us. So if you're interested in that, please come. We're also going to talk about the environmental procurement policy that will be coming forward. We had a good discussion with Barb Ekstrom at peak last month, and so now this is coming forward for a vote, which is great that they've recycling and materials management has been working on that, which is great. We're also going to have some more discussion about the rules of the legislature, everyone's favorite topic. We're up to rules 6 through 12. So if you want to read over those, and there's a red line version in the agenda packet. There's also a clean version. This is not going to be a vote. It's going to be a discussion. So if you want to add anything to that, you're welcome to join us. So that's what we'll be doing. I do have two resolutions.
So let me check. Any questions for Amanda on her report? All right, proceed with your resolutions, Amanda.
All right, so I have resolution N, scheduling a special election in Legislative District Number 2, City of Ithaca, ID 9833, and I would move that.
May I have a second, please? Seconded by Rich John.
And Leslin, if I could just say, Steve and Elizabeth were at our meeting today, and I told them that we had questions and they gave us lots of answers, and I told them they didn't need to stick around for this meeting at the very end of this legislature meeting. But if people have questions, I did take some notes, and other GO members could help me answer questions if you have them.
All right, discussion on this resolution. Dan Klein.
Not a discussion, just a point of information. We were told that if we pass this tonight, that tomorrow morning Board Elections on their website will post a whole bunch of information about the timeline of all the things that will happen next. So probably a lot of the questions that people have will be in writing tomorrow morning on the Board of Elections website.
Thank you, Dan. There's just one piece of it I will point out, is that if we do pass this, then the special election will be held, and this is for general public knowledge, on the date of March 23rd, 2021. That's what the resolution says. So March 23rd, for other people who are watching, just so you know. Anything else? All right. Let's vote.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich Chan?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Abe McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslin McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously. Thank you. There will be an election held. Okay. Next one, Amanda?
Sure. So I also have Resolution O, establishing 2021 meeting dates, ID 9704, and I move that.
And these are meeting dates of the legislature, right? Establishing 2021 meeting dates for the Tompkins County Legislature.
Second.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. Seconded by Mike Lane. Discussion.
So if I could just say this is a pretty standard schedule with the November 2nd Election Day is noted, the NYSAC conference is noted. We did, when we talked about this at GO, we talked about it the last time. There in the past, I think maybe 2 years, we've taken out one of the summer meetings, and we talked to Jason about this. Jason asked a lot of the department heads, didn't get a lot of feedback, did get some feedback that it would be appreciated by staff to take out one of the summer meeting dates. And one that was suggested would be the first meeting in August, which is August 3rd. So in the past, we have elected to take one meeting out to give staff a little bit more of a break. And that is when staff is really ramping up budget stuff. So it would give them a little bit more time to not be planning for this meeting, but to be doing their other regular stuff. So that's just one thing to note. And I think Rich was maybe going to make a motion.
All right.
Thank you,
Rich.
I would
move. Thank you, Amanda. Rich John?
Yes, thank you, Leslyn. I would move to remove the August 3rd meeting from our official established 2021 meeting dates.
All right.
For all the reasons that Amanda stated.
So moved by Rich. Is there a second? Seconded by Shauna Black. Discussion. Mike Lane.
I won't vote for this. We have a regular schedule we've had for years of two meetings a month, and I think we should continue with that. That keeps the regular time between meetings approximately the same, except 2 weeks or 2 months a year. We're part-time elected officials here to do the people's business. We don't need a vacation from what we're doing. I hear the comments about staff, but I also understand that for years we've been able to do two meetings a month without a vacation. Last year was the first one. If anybody needs to take off, they can do that. And besides that, whether they will actually mold their vacation around this, the week that is proposed to eliminate a legislature meeting or not, who knows? But I can't vote for it.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Okay, let's vote on this. The amendment to remove the first meeting in August, it's Tuesday, August 3rd, from the schedule. All right, vote on the amendment.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
No.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Mooring?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
No.
10 ayes, 3 noes.
That carries. As an amendment, and now we have to vote. It now becomes the main motion with that meeting eliminated. Any more discussion on the main motion? Martha Robertson.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I'd say anything about the August meeting, but if you don't mind, I'll just weigh in. Sometimes we have the way the calendar will fall, where a Tuesday happens to be, we would end up like with 3 weeks on a regular, on a regular interval, we'll end up being 3 weeks. I think that's what happened this past, if I can remember right, happened this past year. For 2021, it's not true. It's literally like two weeks. So this is really only going to be a gap of 4 and not 5 weeks. So I did look at the calendar before I decided to support taking out August 3rd. But I think it's something that we shouldn't automatically do. I think it's something we should certainly continue to consider every year. So that's my 2 cents.
Thank you, Martha. Any other comments? All right, let's vote.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Mooring?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
No.
12 ayes, 1 no.
That carries. Thank you very much on that one. Anything else, Amanda?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
All right.
Can I just say something? Not about that.
No, go ahead.
I should have said it back when we were establishing the special election, which I think is a really good government thing that the legislature did quite a number of years ago after a charter review. Prior to that, when there was a vacancy, the vacancy was appointed by the town boards or the city council, depending on where the district was. And we said, hey, that's not right, because we need to have people in the district select their own representative. And therefore, we went to the idea of the special election. And it's worked out several times, different districts. We thought about, for example, in Glenn's district, where he has three town boards that would have had to appoint to his vacancy when he was elected if we hadn't made the change. And theoretically, the town of Lansing and the town of Dryden, even though they don't have the majority of the population, could have decided who the representative was from that district by outvoting the town of Groton. That was one of the things that we talked about back then. So I just wanted to say this was continues to be a good government process that we selected, and it's something I think we're, as a legislature, should be proud of.
Oh, Mike, you just raised up a whole bunch of nightmarish memories for me. Because that happened when this lucky lady was coming in to fill a seat. You know, all of a sudden it seems like the rules were changing. So.
But you were appointed by council, right?
But I had to wait until after the election. Yep. A whole bunch of rules changed then. So I felt special. But you're right. It is a good thing that is happening now. So thank you for that history. All right. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met on December 23rd. Our major agenda item was the preliminary presentation of the proposed environmentally procurement policy that Barb Ekstrom and her team have been working on for several months. The good news about this effort is that it has buy-in from most of the county departments and will, in fact, be implemented by a committee of people representing all of our departments. The final policy will be presented to GEO on Thursday, and it will probably be coming before the legislature for approval in February. So we had a relatively light agenda. We began to review our successes and failures with respect to the goals we set for the committee at the beginning of the year. Seems amazing that it was only a year ago, but there it is. That review will continue at our next meeting on January 25th. We will also likely be considering a resolution in support of the proposed amendments to Owasco Lakes watershed rules and regulations. If you have any questions about that, just let me know. I'd be glad to answer them.
Amanda. All right, questions for Deborah? Amanda Champion?
What time is our meeting on the 25th?
Our meeting is at 1:30, like it always is.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Deborah? No? Thank you very much. I just want to remind folks and reiterate that as of the January, committees continue the same, so you all have been saying it when your meetings are. Shauna and I thank you again for reelecting us. We'll get to the drawing board and, you know, see about committee assignments, which you'll hear about at our next meeting, hopefully. We'll be able to get through it. So for staff watching or public, the committees will continue their work in January. The same committees as of last year will continue. So thank you all so much for your patience. For those of you who we haven't had a chance to speak with just yet, you'll definitely be hearing from us. We get a chance to speak with a few of you. I will be getting circling back to others as well. And thank you for sharing with us your thoughts around committees. So just wanted to reiterate that. No member filed resolutions, minutes of previous meeting. Moved by Dan Klein, seconded by Martha Robertson. Any corrections, additions, anything to the minutes? All right, let's vote on the minutes of December 15th.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Ziegler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously. Any unfinished business? Motion to adjourn. Moved by Deb Dawson, seconded by Martha Robertson and Ann Corman and Amanda Champion. Everyone in favor of adjourning?
Yes.
We are adjourned.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Good night.